Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
It's a tool. It's a protection. Farmers are in a risky business. They don't have control over weather. And with RMA and multi-peril crop insurance, we are providing U.S., you know, we are providing a subsidized premium to assist those farmers in paying that premium so that they can protect their yields.
That's Marcia Bunger. She is the administrator of the Risk Management Agency.
But also that they are able to use that at renewal time at their lenders, with their lenders, because more often than not, I've come to understand that most lenders require crop insurance. So it is a necessity, in my humble opinion.
This is Agriculture Today.
Start things off with all wheat stocks. 660 million bushels, that's down 21.9% from the same time a year earlier.
Lance Onig is the crops branch chief at USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, looking at the June 30th stocks report.
You can see the on-farm portion down 34%, the off-farm down nearly 20% year over year. I would point out that all wheat stocks total represents the lowest June 1 stock since the 13-14 season. You can see that 2.49 billion bushel beginning supply was down 12.8% from the previous season. So we came in with a lower supply. Just a quick update on the last quarter, the March to May disappearance, 364 million bushels. That was down 21.8% from the same period a year earlier. I will move on next to the June 1 corn stocks. Of course, this is third quarter for the corn stocks, so we've got one more quarter to go in the season. But as of June the 1st, 4.35 billion bushels stored. That's up 5.7% from a year earlier. The on-farm stocks up 21.6% from the previous year, but the off-farm stocks down 6%. That's our 12th largest June all-corn stocks total. So it's big, but it's not, you know, too big, historically speaking. Moving on to soybean stocks, again, third quarter, just like the corn, 971.4 million bushels. That's up 26.3% from a year earlier. On-farm stocks up 50.7%, off-farm up 16.6%. Really a rebound here from a relatively low last year. We've been seeing that trend all season long for the soybean stocks, as you can see on this chart. Moving on to the June 1 rough rice stocks, you can see that total down 9.7% from the same time a year earlier. The on-farm portion down 27.8%, off-farm portion down 7%. The long grain varieties accounted for about two-thirds of the total rough rice stored as of June the 1st. A few other crops included in the stocks report today. You can see barley stocks down 41%. From a year earlier, in fact, that is record low June 1 stocks for barley. The previous low was all the way back in 1953, so not a lot of barley on hand right now. Canola stocks down 48.5%. That's the second lowest total since 2013. Chickpea stocks as of June the 1st down 10.5%. On-farm up 79%, but the off-farm down 18.9% there. Dry edible peas stored as of June the 1st, down 4.1% year over year. Flaxseed down more than 60% from what was stored a year earlier. And lentils off 35.7% to the lowest June 1 total since 2016. Oat stocks off 14.3% year over year. Rye down 48.2% from a year earlier. Huge increase in sorghum stocks as of June the 1st, but as I mentioned earlier on, we had a really big sorghum crop last season, larger than we would normally see. As a result, we've still got a lot of stocks on hand for sorghum right now. Of course, we see lower acreage this season, probably partially as a result of that. And then last but not least, the durum wheat stocks as of June the 1st, 21.2 million bushels. That's off 22.5% from what was stored a year earlier.
Again, that's Lance Honig, Crops Branch Chief with USDA's National Ag Statistics Service with the June 30th Stocks Report. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
There's a lot of pieces, a lot of components to the Fairness for Farmers campaign that National Farmers Union has been advancing over the last year or so.
Mike Strands is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union.
For decades, really, as long as National Farmers Union has been around, and really even before that, farmers and ranchers, independent family farmers and ranchers, know the importance of competition. And when there's not a competitive market, whether it's for selling your cattle or for buying inputs, getting your tractor serviced, you name it, if there's not a competitive market, the farmer is going to suffer. And there are a lot of pieces to that. Right now, we're seeing the most progress and the most legislative movement related to the livestock markets. And in the last couple of weeks, really in the month of June, there's been some pretty big steps ahead on a couple bills. One is the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act. This bill was part of a package that the House, the full House of Representatives, passed about 2 weeks ago. That was part of the package called the Lower Food and Fuel Costs Act. And the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Bill was tucked into that and would give USDA additional powers to, or additional capacity to dive into some of the violations of Packers and Stockyards Act that packing companies, processors, you name it, have pushed upon farmers and ranchers. So that Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act will help provide greater fairness for farmers by putting some teeth into what USDA can do. So that passed the full House back in the middle of June, and then last week, the Senate Agriculture Committee passed that bill through the committee, so it awaits consideration by the full Senate. At the same time, the same markup, the Senate Ag Committee also advanced the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act. This is a bill that would move more of the cattle market to the open market and would reduce or at least limit the amount of trades that could be conducted through contracts or alternative marketing arrangements. If you don't know what the going rate is for cattle and that they're on a secret cattle contract system, it's hard to set a real price. It's hard to have that price discovery function. So we're excited to see that progress move along in a bipartisan fashion. And so both the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act and the Cattle Price Transparency and Discovery Act are both making a lot of progress, and we're hoping to see more of that in July.
But sometimes to find fairness, you have to have documentation. Zach Ducheneau is administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency.
You know what's really important, and this is with all disasters, it is challenging to go out and see the destruction of your livelihood, but it's really important that we document that. Take pictures, shoot a video, write some notes, because the more verifiable information that we've got, the better. Also, do not allow yourself to be turned away from something you think you're eligible for without submitting an application. We would rather have you turn in an application that we have to turn down than not apply at all, because when we turn down your application, you have due process rights. And again, you can exercise those due process rights, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility that we get something wrong. We're really interested in finding those places, finding the gaps where our programs don't reach. That's another place where those denied applications can help us scope the magnitude of that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I would agree with you. The dairy donation program is a fantastic program, and it was, you know, really designed to take a situation where dairy farmers were dumping milk and put that into consumers who really needed to have that nutritional product.
Dana Cole is deputy administrator of the Ag Marketing Services Dairy Program.
The premise on which the program has been established is wonderful. At this particular time, we are in the infancy as far as implementing the dairy donation program. As you know, we implemented the milk donation reimbursement program as part of the last farm bill. That program did not receive enough publicity and enough participation. I think partially because of the reimbursement level. And that has been corrected through the dairy donation program, where reimbursements are more reflective of what the costs are being incurred for those donations. So I think at this particular time, we need to see how the program further develops. Any assistance in encouraging processors and feeding networks to participate in the program is always welcome, and we're working on increasing the awareness of the program.
Just like the dairy industry had challenges, so do producers outside of the U.S.
Similar pattern there into South America. I don't think we're going to see much change from the general La Nina regime. You mentioned right now the main focus there in Australia is the wheat belt. They've been pretty dry there, Argentina wheat belt. They've been pretty dry there, so that's been the big story in South America currently. If we move forward, you mentioned Australia. They were drier back 2017, 2018, those years, even into 2019. But once we've moved into this La Nina regime, that really favors a more wet pattern and really favors moisture for both wheat and cotton in Australia. I'll mention India here briefly. The India monsoon is just getting going. Their cotton belt there actually into the western quarter has seen a very slow start so far to the monsoon. It does look like showers will pick up there over the next couple of weeks, finally, for some seeding opportunities there. But they're about the western third of the Indian cotton belt is where we focus our major concerns for the summer. Elsewhere across India, the soybean regions, sugarcane areas should be pretty good and end up near to above normal for the monsoon. But those western areas are a big concern. A few other areas, China, summer outlook looks pretty decent for the rest of the summer. Fairly wet overall. Not a whole lot of heat. Some periods of heat there, but not enough to really stress the crop. In Europe, concerns are really mainly across southern Europe, corn and oil seeds there. Ukraine and South Russia do look like they will see some showers as we move into July and August, but they are dealing with some dryness right now in those corn and oil seed areas for eastern Ukraine and South Russia, but we do expect those to ease here later on in the summer.
Joe Woznicki is a meteorologist with the Commodity Weather Group.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing is this tendency for us to remain in the La Nina regime here. So I think there's only two other cases dating back to 1950 where we had three straight years in a row of La Nina. And this is really, really amping up. So La Nina is, for instance, the western drought tends to be stronger in La Nina regimes, and so we've had three straight years of that, which is really intensifying the west and that west dryness and that wildfire potential. It's really keeping our Atlantic hurricane seasons active. So we had two of the three highest, most active hurricane seasons the last 2 years, and it looks like that's going to be the same this year. So just an intense La Nina situation, pretty robust over the last 3 years here, and that's been interesting to watch.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Barley, you can see just over 3 million acres planted. That's up from the March intentions, 14.5% above what was planted last year.
Talking planted acreage for 2022, Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at USDA's National Ag Statistics Service.
Canola just shy of 2 million acres. That's down from both the March intentions and from the previous season. Of course, North Dakota, a key state for canola, some of the challenges there this season may be impacting that total. Chickpea acreage, you can see, up significantly from the March intentions, but still down 5.3% from what was planted last season. Dry beans down from both the intentions and last season. Dry edible peas also down from the March intentions, but 4.2% above what was planted last season. Big drop in flaxseed from both the intentions and last season. Looking at our hay crop for this year, we're expecting 15.5 million acres of alfalfa to be harvested. That's up 1.4% from what was harvested last season. Other hay acres expected to total just over 36 million acres. That's up 1.6% from what was harvested last season. Of course, we did see some lower hay acreages last year, again, because of the dry weather, particularly in the west. So a bit of a rebound expected this season there. Lentils planted 648,000 acres, down nearly 18% from the intentions, 8.5% below what was planted last season. and mustard seed, relatively small acreage crop there, but you can see up 19.4% last year. You can see oats are down from the March intentions and from last season, although a big increase in harvested area. Again, we saw high abandonment last year, much more of a return to normal levels here. Peanuts at 1.54 million acres planted this year, down 1.8% from the March intentions, 2.7% below what was planted last year. Georgia, of course, is our largest producing state for peanuts. They're down 3% from last year. Otherwise, we're seeing increases across several of the other producing states. Potatoes, you can see 910,000 acres planted this season. That's 3.5% below what was planted last year. And in fact, that is a record low planted and harvested area for potatoes this season. Proso millet, 670,000 acres there. You can see that's off 7.6%. And then rapeseed at just 9 million acres. 9,000 acres, relatively small crop there and getting even smaller, as you can see down chart the year over year. Looking at the rice acres, 2.34 million acres, that's down 4.4% from the March intention, 7.5% below what was planted last season. Arkansas, of course, mostly long grain acreage there, down 4% from last year. California, more of a medium short crop there. Water shortages there really pushing acreage down in California. That's having a big impact on the change, especially since March. In fact, that's the lowest California all rice acreage since 1958. Looking at our rye crop, we're expecting acreage there to be up 1.7%. Bigger increase on the harvested side, although the majority of that crop is not harvested for grain. Anyway, safflower up slightly from last year. Sorghum, 6.3 million acres planted this year. Is up a little bit from the March intentions, but off fairly sharply from last year. We had a really big acreage, big crop last year for sorghum, getting back down to a little bit more of a normal level for that crop this season.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Particularly on the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act, there's some mechanisms within that bill that allow for some regional differences and provide a little bit of a leeway, I suppose, in mandating and requiring how much of the cattle price, the cattle market needs to be on a cash basis or not in a alternative market arrangement.
That's Mike Strands, Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union.
So that's one way to tackle it, where there's some flexibility, you know, particularly in the South where AMAs, South in the South Plains out west, AMAs are a bit more prevalent. There's some adjustments that make it different in those parts of the country rather than in the Northern Plains. So that's one way to get at it, is to make sure that the legislation, be it the Cattle Price Transparency and Discovery Act, or if it is the Farm Bill, they're written in ways to allow for some regionality. And that's how we've approached this bill as well.
Of course, all this is building up to a big one next year. The Farm Bill.
I've got the Farm Bill now signed in my office right now, and I think it's Farm Bill soon is probably it. You know, Congress has a lot on its plate. Like I mentioned, the Farm Bill expires in 2023, so that process is going to only get busier and busier. Got a lot to do before then, too. In any case, Farmers Union has been working with it, with our leadership. Our National Board of Directors has been going through the national policy book that our members approved at our convention, and we're soon to finalize a list of priorities and places we want to put the most emphasis and keep in mind as we get into the Farm Bill process. I'm quite certain, though, that those are going to largely focus around a few areas. One, competition. A lot of the issues that I've mentioned already if they're not tidied up and taken care of yet in 2022, may well find themselves in a Farm Bill situation in 2023. But we're going to keep pushing ahead now, striking while the iron is hot. Another area that we're going to focus on is making sure the farm safety net is as strong as it should be and provides farmers and ranchers with assurances and reduces risk when it comes to marketing their crops, livestock, products, and to ensure that taxpayers also feel confident in how these funds are being spent. Make sure that the farm safety net helps in times of need, not just all the time. And we've got some careful crafting to do there. I also expect we'll have some priorities on conservation and climate. For many obvious reasons, this is an urgent issue, and we're going to be diving in soon to ensure that there's a way for farmers and ranchers to be and to continue to be part of the solutions to our climate crisis. And one more piece is that I expect we'll see some dairy emphasis too, kind of outside the farm safety net priority, just to emphasize how there's a need for growth management and dairy market stabilization. We saw how that almost became part of the farm bill back in the 2014 process. But as we had seen hundreds, well, thousands of dairy farms go out of business since 2014, it's clear that there's something wrong in dairy. And if there's ways to help smooth out those price peaks and valleys, I think we'll all be better off. So those are four quick priority areas I expect we'll see: the farm safety net, competition, climate and conservation, and dairy. There may be more, but that's where we're starting from.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The focus and the mission of RMA is to be able to provide the American farmer, rancher, forester with crop insurance coverage that not only assists in mitigating natural disaster losses, but also as a way to use it as a marketing tool so that they can then go to their lenders, their bankers, and develop cash flows that result in a profitable year.
Marcia Bunger is the administrator of USDA's Risk Management Agency.
So there's both profitability and sustainability when it comes to RMA and crop insurance. With this particular administration, are one of taking it a step further, and that is to look at ways to mitigate climate change. In the past couple of years, I think we all can agree that there's been a lot of fluctuating weather that we've been experiencing. It seems to be excessive when it comes to the pendulum swinging back and forth between just kind of a normal year versus it's either extreme drought or extreme wet, extreme tornadoes, hurricanes, hail, wind. Just in out my back door in Iowa, they experienced the derecho, which was nothing ever experienced before. And so this administration is committed to looking at ways to mitigate that climate change. And in addition, we've also looked at ways to improve upon what historically maybe USDA has lacked in doing, and that is to serve the underserved communities of this country in agriculture. In addition to the underserved communities, the people, we're also looking at strengthening underserved commodities, specialty crops, livestock producers, you know, people that farm organically. And that kind of wraps it up with, I think, in one nutshell of about what RMA is.
And just this week, USDA announcing changes for specialty crops.
Well, we're hoping to simplify some aspects of those specialty crop growers' reporting requirements. And so RMA has come out with a new marketing certification that allows producers to self-identify if they will not have a disinterested third-party record, which was always, you know, an additional step. This policy is going to enable those specialty crop producers to use their own supporting production records. For example, direct marketers, vertically integrated producers. So I think of right off the top of my head, those people that grow vegetables and fruits and sell them at your fresh market stands, your farmers market stands. And the policy as written is going to hopefully improve that marketing or that production reporting requirement for 20 individual crops. Now, Most of the crops on the list are either fruits or vegetables, and I won't go through the whole list, but I would encourage those that listen that are interested or those that are growers of these specialty crops, go to the USDA RMA website, www.rma.usda.gov.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Drought has caused a lot of problems in my home state of Utah. This is happening in some other places, but to a pretty acute degree in Utah. Ranchers are delaying putting livestock on the range. Growth has, of course, been impacted by water uncertainty, and a lot of local economies are being stretched thin by virtue of their inability to access some bureau assets like Lake Powell.
At a Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee hearing on the Western drought, Mike Lee from Utah.
Really appreciate some of the recent actions, decisions made by the Bureau of Reclamation to boost water levels at Lake Powell, including, of course, the release of 500,000 acre feet from Flaming Gorge Reservoir and the withholding of an additional 480,000 acre feet from release downriver from Lake Powell.